The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
If you think the public dialogue over gay marriage, gender change, and sexism is challenging, imagine what it's like for a school teacher to deal with those same topics when youngsters in their classrooms begin asking questions. How does a teacher handle topics that many adults have a tough time with? Well, on this edition of UWM Today, we meet a UWM professor who's developed a book that is giving teachers a roadmap to talk about hot-button issues like sexuality. Joining us in the studio is Kim Kosher, Associate Dean of the Peck School of the Arts and Professor of Art Education, and also the editor of this amazing book, Rethinking Sexism, Gender, and Sexuality, that is aimed at a really, really broad audience. Welcome, Kim. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Tom. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us about what was behind this book, this idea of creating the roadmap.
Sure. I've been working, one of the co-editors that I work with is named Melissa Ballo-Temple, and she lives here in Milwaukee as well. And she and I have been doing a lot of work around organizing with people in MPS to add gender inclusivity to discrimination policies and things like that. And through that discussion, Melissa was on the editorial board for Rethinking Schools, and she kind of pitched that idea, I think, to the managing editor and the board. And then we put together this small team, after speaking together with the three of us. And each of us had, their editors are kind of all across the country. And so we each had contacts that we could, draw on, depend on to contribute to the book. And the way that Rethinking Schools operates is they pull some already existing content from their journal and they republish them in a collection. And then you... typically, there's not a whole lot of original content, but for this one, because there wasn't that much stuff, we had to produce a lot more original content than usual.
And why this topic? What was it that said we've got to help teachers with these tough topics?
Absolutely. Through our organizing on that stuff that Melissa and I were working on, we got to know parents and kids who were being challenged by, discriminatory policies and things like that. And so it became a really personal, it became sort of emotional project for us. And so we knew that teachers wanted to be helpful but didn't have the language for it and didn't know how to, how one would broach subjects. There's such a conflated dialogue with sexuality and love and, who loves whom and things like that. And, kindergarten children typically talk about, can girls marry girls, that kind of thing. And a lot of teachers just felt nervous about that we spoke with, felt nervous about bringing it up. So we wanted to give them the tools that would help them, in a developmentally appropriate way, talk to the children about, be able to answer questions and things like that as they came up.
You mentioned kindergarten kids, but the book itself is really aimed at teachers at every level.
It is. It's for early childhood through college level. And this is the first book that Rethinking School has done that included teacher education, which I was a big advocate for and happy that it's there because engaging pre-service teachers in dialogues around sexism, gender, and sexuality is really important before they get out into the schools as well.
Well, you talk about the fact that teachers may be uncomfortable getting into this topic. There can be a lot of blowback from a lot of different sources if a teacher says, quote unquote, the wrong thing, right?
Absolutely. And we talk a lot in the book about the context specificity of being able to do this. If you work in a small rural school district that you know you're going to get a lot of pushback, well, then you don't dive in completely, so that we try to frame it in a way that would give people different kinds of entry points. So if I work in an urban school district where there's much more discussion around diversity and things like that, then I could be a little more bold about the statements I make and the kind of moves I make to make my classroom inclusive. But we also recognize that the people are in, you know, it could even be a single administrator within a big district that's going to be, there'll be blowback, as you said. And so we talk about that, like being mindful of your context and then, but doing something.
Because the fact is, well, the parents or maybe some politicians in a community may be uncomfortable with those discussions. That doesn't mean that the kids aren't going to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Great irony there that the teacher who is the closest to the child, sometimes their voice is not the strongest,
right.
or the one given the most credence when it comes to deciding how you discuss these issues.
Right. And as you said, kids already talk about this stuff. It's not as if, I mean, people want to shield children from things, but children have their own world apart from us, you know, and they try to figure out a lot of things through, you know, with the younger children through play, and, you know, the early childhood classrooms will often have little kitchens and things like that. And so they're negotiating how to be a family with each other. And teachers can support, you know, more inclusive ways of talking about family and things like that. And, you know, people immediately think you're going to talk about sex with five-year-olds or something. And that's just not age appropriate. You know, you talk about the ways people love each other and that, love each other, and love is a good thing, and that, you know, that would be a very, you know, age-appropriate way to talk about how different people, you know, how love is manifested in different ways through different kinds of families.
Now, teachers themselves, of course, are the product of the schools that they were taught in.
Sure.
And if you look back 15, 20, 25 years ago, a lot of these topics were nowhere on the radar screen in the general public, let alone in the schools. So it sounds like there's got to be a lot of education for the educators.
Sure. And the pace of change, just it's incredible to me to witness that, you know, the speed with which things are changing. So, you know, this idea of gender transitioning and things like that, you know, that was not on the public radar very much. And then all of a sudden it's everywhere in the media and, you know, Caitlyn Jenner and this sort of thing. So children are coming in knowing all that information, and people haven't been very well educated as far as how to deal with that stuff. So, and also our approach in the book is very much about the intersections of identity, and so that we're not just you don't just have two mommies. You also, you know, live in a culturally specific place, and race can be a part of that, and those kinds of things. So we talk about how all aspects of identity are really interconnected, and that's the way you need to approach it with students and with yourself.
Are there certain ages or certain classes where those discussions are more difficult? You mentioned the kindergartners, but I understand that even college educators are using your book now.
Yeah. I think there's different challenges at each level, and teachers know that kids respond to, you know, if I used to be a middle school teacher myself, and if you made any reference to, a hot dog or balls, or, you know, the kids are going to be giggling and you lose control and, you know, whatever. But if you, I think, you know, we also take a real sex positive approach, and, you know, like all of this abstinence only sex education that's been proven to be not working is not improving, you know, teen pregnancy or anything like that. So having more frank discussions with children, young people, in a developmentally appropriate way, like I said, is, the challenges are, you know, you get like super giggly people in middle school because they're just figuring that stuff out. And so you just know that already and realize that I'm going to have to work through, you know,
see the hormones oozing out of your skin,
you know,
right?
People, when I would tell people I was a middle school teacher, they would look at me like I, you know, dealt with another species or something. But I don't know how people forget what it's like to be a middle school student myself, you know, like. And then in high school, they're more advanced and many of them are engaging in activities, and you need to be able to open up a space that is safe for people to talk about stuff. And so one of the chapters in the book is called, the chapters are sort of the big heading, and then there's articles and stories within each of the chapters. So there's one story by one of the other editors that's called "Elbow is Not a Sexy Word." And it's just a really fun, playful way that she worked with high school kids talking about, you know, slang words for different body parts and why aren't there any slang words for elbow because nobody wants to talk about it, right? So that kind of thing, that you're meeting the kids where they are and really let them help drive the conversation, you know, just be open to – and you'll get some kids in a class, you know, in a high school class might come from a family that believes very strongly that, you know, homosexuality is a sin or gender transitions and things like that. You have to be open to everyone's perspective, but also acknowledging that everyone has a right to an education. And how do you create that safe space where that person can, you know, talk about their sincerely held beliefs with people who, you know, might be transitioning or, you know, so that you create this dialogical space where people can have those conversations respectfully to one another and not, you know, pointing fingers at one another, but rather trying to open a space where we can all come together and talk through it.
I've read some of the reviews online. I think it shot up to the top of one of the Amazon lists.
That surprised us. It just shocked that happened. But yeah, it did. The night before it came out, it was a hot pick on Amazon, number one.
but that suggests that there's a real market out there. Was there anything like this sampler of how-tos when getting into these tough talks?
Yeah, no, I don't think there. I mean, we really researched it before we started on the project to make sure that, you know, it was going to address some things that hadn't been addressed. There's some wonderful web resources that we actually include in the book. Welcoming Schools is a division of the Human Rights Campaign, and they have incredible resources available, so we partnered with them to do this book. And also the Gay Straight, I can't remember the name right now, it's escaping me, but there's the GSAs, it's the organization that supports Gay Straight Alliances in schools, and they also have really good resources. So there were web-based things for people to pull together, but teachers didn't know where to go, you know, and they trust Rethinking Schools because it has a history of addressing, through teacher voices, you know, really important issues.
And Rethinking Schools, by the way, is a think tank right here in Milwaukee. It's really amazing that we have right in our backyard the source of a lot of new ways of approaching education nationally.
Yeah, it's kind of literally in my backyard because I live in River West and the office is in River West. But yeah, they're very widely known, and they're known for dealing with important issues through the voices of teachers. So it was an interesting project for me to be involved in because, you know, in my past I've written more scholarly articles and things like this, and this one was really from a different kind of voice and more of a more storytelling, and I really enjoyed that aspect of it as well.
And a lot of how-to. I mean, really, really providing steps for teachers that they can follow so that they can have a successful conversation with their students about something that might make some of the teachers a little embarrassed.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's part of the challenge here, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And stories about people who've taken that risk, you know, and I think they're inspiring stories that a teacher can look to and say, you know, everything from a man who started bringing a Hello Kitty lunchbox to his elementary class. So a very simple but, you know, the children went crazy when he did that, and they had these wonderful discussions, you know, on the carpet, as children do, about why a man would have a Hello Kitty lunchbox, and, you know, and he just chose that one simple act to spark conversation in his classroom. And so there's, you know, from that to more directly like sex education and things like that, they give examples that teachers can follow.
What sort of feedback have you had from teachers?
So far, incredible feedback. And we actually put a little plug. We have I'm also involved in Educators Network for Social Justice here in Milwaukee. And we're having we have a one-day teaching conference on the 30th of April coming up. And Rethinking Schools is always there selling books. And so it'll be really fun to hear people talk about it there. And I'm really anticipating some great dialogue. And Melissa and I are presenting on the book as well. So I'll have more direct feedback on the 30th.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. Joining me in the studio is Kim Kozier. Kim is the Associate Dean of the Peck School of the Arts at UWM, also Professor of Art Education. But today we're talking about sex and gender and sexuality topics that often come up in classrooms from kindergarten all the way through college. Kim and her colleagues have edited a book that takes a look at how teachers can learn how to continue or carry on successful conversations about these topics. The book is called Rethinking Sexism, Gender, and Sexuality. And as we mentioned before, it was recently a number one pick on Amazon.com. Kim, could you give us some very specific examples of the stories in your book that you think are going to be most impactful for teachers when they do talk about sex and gender sure. with their kids?
Yeah. Actually, I forgot to say earlier that the whole thing sort of got sparked by an article that Melissa Ballo-Temple wrote, and it was called It's Okay to Be Neither. And she had a kid in her class who was gender variant or gender nonconforming, or, you know, there's all different ways to say that, and those two are not the best choices, but I'm having a hard time remembering. So, there was a young person in her classroom, and she just wrote about her own learning journey through having this child in her classroom, that she realized that she had organized her classroom in a way that separated the sexes in unnecessary ways. So, I mean, part of it has to do with plumbing, you know. Teachers line up their kids to go to the bathroom, and they put the boys on one side and the girls on the other. Well, not everybody fits. You know, there are people who are in between, either physiologically their gender identity is doesn't fit what their body, is telling them. So it really caused her to rethink many of her practices in her classroom. And why can't I just have them, like, find fun ways to divide them up, for example? And really that kind of snowballed into rethinking the way she talked about families and all that kind of thing. So that one child actually was the spark for the whole book project. And there are other, I think another one that I think is really strong is a teacher named Dale Weiss, who's here also in Milwaukee, who worked there. She had a child in her classroom, might have been the kid that was in Melissa's earlier, and then another older kid that were having some trouble with other children, bullying them and things like that. And so Dale invited them in to help, to work with her to develop a lesson to teach the kids in her class. And so they did this whole, you know, she tells a story of how that lesson was developed. And that ended up growing into a photo that the girls participated in with a local artist named Lois Bielfield, who did a show on androgyny. And so it was really interesting how all these different Milwaukee kind of touch points happen.
Like dominoes begin to line up and fall into place.
Right. And so those young people now have moved on to middle school, and they're facing new challenges again. We're kind of trying to keep tabs on them a bit. But it really was that story. And then my colleague, Jeff Sapp, who is one of the editors, wrote a really wonderful story in my section on teacher education, where a woman felt challenged by what he said about inclusivity and LGBT issues, and came up and respectfully asked him to talk after class. And, you know, she was an evangelical Christian and felt that he was asking her to challenge her beliefs. And he invited her to have a conversation, and it's a really wonderful story about how that idea of opening up that dialogic space where you can still have differences, but you can respect one another as people. So I think that's a good one. And one of my favorites is I wrote a thing called bias goggles, and let's put our bias goggles on. And it was just a funny thing that came up in my class when I was talking about race and gender identity. We were doing a sort of media literacy, critical media literacy lesson, and I was using the Lion King Circle of Life, and, you know, that little clip. And the students, you know, love Disney always, and it's a really challenging thing to bring up to help them see that, you know, it's this light-furred male animal that's held up exalted in front of everyone, and they all bow down to him. And so it, like, gives kids this idea that, you know, there's a natural order, and it's male and white. And so then I said, you know, at that point, there were Precious, the movie was out, and The Princess and the Frog. And I said it'd be fun to, you know, with your new bias goggles on, to watch these movies. And I stepped out to go to a meeting, and we had reconvened in the afternoon. I came back, and they had watched those both those movies. And so I, that ended up, like, on the fly, I had to facilitate this, and some really interesting things, and talking again about that intersectionality where race and gender and poverty and, you know, social class and gender identity and sexual, you know, violence that was involved in the movie Precious and things like that all intersect to create identities. So I felt like it was a great way to kind of highlight that idea that we're not just one thing.
What about administrators? It's one thing for a teacher to hear about this great book on an Amazon list and say, you know, I do have a tough time talking about sex in my classroom. I'd like to learn how to do that. Have you run into any situations where the principals or other administrators, school board members, may not be crazy about that idea?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's a very real challenge. And actually, there are instances in the book where somebody was, you know, called on the carpet. In fact, Jody Sokolauer, who is the managing editor, and the article that I mentioned earlier, the elbow is not a sexy word, or maybe it was another one of her contributions. But the children asked her, or the young, she was in high school, I think they were freshmen, asked her if she was married, and she said, I'm not, at that time it wasn't legal to be married, and she said, well, she wasn't married, but she is in a relationship, and then they wanted to know more, and she said, well, tomorrow we'll have some, I'll set aside some time, and I'll show you some pictures of my family. They had a young daughter, and so the principal got word that she had had this discussion of her family, which was completely about loving each other and, you know, not at all, of course, about sexual activity. And he, you know, he gave her a, like, formal letter of reprimand and things like this for bringing her own sexuality in the classroom. So the story is very much about how she pushed back on that and, you know, got involved with the union and these kinds of things. And so that would give a teacher inspiration about it. But I think also if a teacher is armed with the information in that book, they're much better able to articulate why it's important to administrators and school boards and things like that.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about the fact that if you're a kindergarten teacher, there may be some chapters in this book that work better when you're thinking about how to communicate with that 4 or 5 year old. Mm-hmm. But the challenge that I sense that teachers must have is that, well, they may do a good job when a student is in their 4th grade class or 8th grade class. There's no guarantee that that the student, as they move through the system, won't run into a brick wall in terms of openness or willingness to discuss this.
Absolutely.
So, in a sense, it could be frustrating once you open that dam up and the water starts rushing.
Yeah,
it may not keep flowing.
It's true. One of the things that Welcoming Schools does that I mentioned in the earlier part of the show was they have safe zone training, and so a teacher. You can post the safe zone sticker on your door, and there's a lot of schools where teachers will do this, and then the children know, or the young people know, that that's a place you can go if you're having trouble, because you're absolutely right that, you know, there are people who, you know, on various grounds refuse to support those kids. So, but just reminding people that we have an obligation as teachers to support all children. Regardless of whether we believe, you know, like if we acknowledge that their parents are gay or lesbian or, you know, any number of ways, that we have a responsibility to educate all people and to respect them all. But not everybody's going to follow through that. So I think you can let yourself be known as a safe space in a school as well.
You mentioned the evangelical student who had issues or had concerns about the discussion. We're right now in the middle of this amazing political year with this huge divide in the country, you know, great polarization of people when you think about culture and about ideology, religion. Any advice in the book on how to deal with situations that become political or maybe start political?
Sure. Yeah, I think Jeff Sapp that I mentioned earlier has a really great—the follow-up of that story where he was talking to the student is that he was raised evangelical, and I was as well. And so he has a really interesting take on what he calls the clobber passages, which are, you know, like the Leviticus and the chapters in the Bible that specifically say stuff about, you know, man lying with man, things like that. And because we both come from that background, you know, I've worked through my own faith journey to see that there are people of all faiths who believe a range of different things. And so that you can't, you know, I have a right, like anybody else, to have, you know, to believe what I believe about spirituality and God and things like that. And so having that discussion as it relates to the politics today, I mean, it's a politics of exclusion a lot of times. And if you really were, a Christian person, I think you would, it might give you pause to think that excluding has become what is seen as the right path. And you know, I think there are many, many people of all faiths that disagree with that kind of take on how we treat one another.
And often it's the adults, the people who aren't in the classroom, who become so agitated with the very notion of some of these ideas being discussed openly. Yeah. And yet, as you pointed out earlier, with social media, with smartphones, you know, kids are 50 miles ahead of us.
Yeah, I mean, kids know so much more than we give them credit for a lot of times, you know, absolutely. I think that, you know, they do a lot to protect us from what they see as dangerous information. And so you have to acknowledge that, I think, as an educator and as a parent, that children know way more than we like to pretend or fool ourselves into believing they know.
So is there another book that's coming that should be written by students?
That would be incredible. That's actually a wonderful idea. I'd love to take part in that. Maybe this deliberative dialogue that our colleagues
are maybe listeners
doing.
Giving you a call.
That
right?
would be cool, yeah.
As things come along.
Yeah.
What else is on the horizon with this project? Anything else? You mentioned upcoming discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to be at the Educators Network for Social Justice conference in Franklin on the 30th of April. And then we're working on some book parties and things like that. There's going to be coming up a partnership, I think, with Will and Pattern and the Public House, where we'll have a fun event. And then I'm also talking to Daniel Golden at Boswell's, but other people are doing it in other parts of the country as well.
So the name of the book is?
Rethinking Sexism, Gender, and Sexuality.
And it's published by?
Rethinking Schools.
So just type in Rethinking Sexism, Gender, Sexuality, and you'll see just how well you guys are doing on that Amazon list.
Yeah.
Really quite amazing. Well, best of luck, Kim.
Thank you
for sharing your ideas. And, you know, if listeners want to get in touch with you, if they say, hey, that student idea is a great one, how can they follow up?
They can email me at kcosier@uwm.edu.
That's her name, and she's Associate Dean of the Peck School of the Arts and our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.